Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
All righty. It's hot outside. It's June. It's our first SC Wild of, well, I guess officially we haven't hit summer, but don't tell the people who are out there getting sunburned. Turn before you burn, as the DJ would say between his beach music songs. And it's hot, and folks are getting out and doing a bunch of things around the state of South Carolina, so it's great to have Major Billy Downer and a special guest with us tonight as he wants to talk about some important things related to boating and fishing here in South Carolina. Major, good evening. It's great to have you with us.
Always great to be on the phone with you, Phil. I have actually been in your studio when you were away, believe it or not.
When?
I was cheating on you last week. I did another radio show with Representative Chris Wooten in your studio.
Well, my feelings are hurt.
I know. I'm going to be there. I promise.
So you owe.
Coming back. I promise.
I told you. Isn't it a beautiful studio?
It is a beautiful studio. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Not like the old card table days.
No,
We had stuff around the card table.
No, we've progressed. We have progressed now. But this is Kevin Cohen's studio, so he gets all the credit. And the folks here at The Point Radio and Glory Communications, they get all the credit. We're just sort of bumming space from them.
Absolutely. We got some big news today, Phil. We've talked about it in many shows. We've talked about it probably for 2 years now. But today, S-96, the Senate Bill 96, passed the House. They adopted it, and it will now go to the governor for signing, and that is the Boating Safety Act. So we are now one of 33 states in the nation who have a born after or a mandatory boater education law, which is a great thing for us, I think. I'm glad to see us finally get to this place. And reminder for folks before they really freak out and go, I got to go get boater education. No, if you're born after July 1st, 2007, then you'll have to get it. If you're born before that, you are a grandfather the rest of your life.
Hmm.
So it's a very slow rollout. So if someone is not 16, basically, by July 1st, they will then have to take boater education before they operate a boat of 10 horsepower or greater in the state of South Carolina. Of course, there are some exceptions. We've talked about in the past. One of the exceptions is if you have merchant mariner credentials. The other exception is if you have any Coast Guard training, like a six-pack, Coast Guard captain's license, or if you are on a boat with someone who either meets the exemption clause, they're born before July 1st, 2007, or they've taken boater education, then you can operate a boat. And then there's the rental provision, which we're working on now. We'll be working with renters, our rental companies throughout the state that rent boats. If someone is born after July 1st, 2007, and wants to operate a rental boat, they can take a quick 15-minute course. It's a temporary certificate that's good for 30 days that allows them to rent a boat. So that went into that will go into effect upon signing by the governor. And then we, of course, DNR, we'll talk about that later, but we will have absolutely a period of time that we'll give folks time to just, we're not going to start enforcing this law immediately.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have time for folks to kind of get used to it. There'll be an adjustment period, particularly with the rental boat industry. This summer, we'll probably work through this summer to work into this to where it'll become something we'll start enforcing. But the Boater Safety Act did pass. We're happy about that. Excited to see that happen. A lot of hard work by a lot of families. The Randall Smith family, of course, Morgan Kaiser and her mother have worked very hard. All of them have worked hard for boater education, and we're glad to see this day come. So, good day. I look forward to the governor signing it. And we'll talk more about this in the future. But tonight, I got a very special guest, one of our officers from the Charleston area. I asked him very last minute to come on the show, so I'm glad to have Willie LaDue with us. when y'all let me know he's on, we'll
he's with us.
Introduce him officially.
You got him.
Willie, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Hey, thanks for asking me.
Well, Willie, tell me, start off, so how long have you worked with DNR?
I'm in my 17th year.
17th year, and I'm in my 25th.
Hmm.
So together yep. we have 42 years of service. So there you have it.
There we go.
Willie has been named as the expert in the Charleston area for fishing. So, Willie, I'm going to give you kind of the show for a minute here. Talk about, so inshore, what's biting right now? What's going on?
Right now, we're seeing catches of the redfish, and the flounder bite has been pretty good in certain areas. And the trout, they're still nibbling around. People have been trying to get out. The weather really and truly hasn't cooperated here recently. And so it's kind of kept things a little bit on the slower than normal side. But maybe when the warmer weather shows up, the wind will die down, we'll get some more of those southeast, southwesterly winds. And that'll make a big difference on what they're catching.
Yeah, I've always heard when the wind's from the west, the fish bite the best.
Hmm.
That's right.
I guess
that's right.
I guess that holds true. That's what you talk about
does.
Southwest winds, Phil, just trying to help you out.
Like that.
Phil's still new at this. We try to help him through some of this. We'll give him some of the terms so he understands it. But
exactly.
So I've heard flounder's really been really strong up in Murrells Inlet, of all places. They said they're just really biting strong up there. I don't know. When you're talking about flounder bite, they do, you know, trolling mostly?
No. Murrells Inlet is known for the flounder and the trolling rigs and everything like that. And they seem like the flounder capital of South Carolina. But what I'm seeing is they're using the mud minnows on the bottom. I guess we'd call it a Texas rig or Carolina rig. And some of them are coming under floats, the popping corks and different things like that. And working the edge of the grass and near the inlets, Prices, Stono, all those kind of inlets.
Okay. How about gigging? Have you seen any activity gigging lately this early?
I personally have not. I haven't heard anything from many of my giggers that go on a regular basis. So that kind of tells me maybe some things have been off. When there's a lot of wind, it muddies the water, so they can't see the fish. So they gotta go on a night where there's no wind. But like I said, we've had probably since really middle of May, we've had just so many northeast winds that just drive so much more wind and keep everything muddy, that the nights just have not been great.
Right, and you did mention the cooler weather. It's been unusually cool some nights, particularly here in May and June, so that always slows things down that I've seen. And I know you're saying that, so that makes sense to me. How about anything on sheephead on structure inshore at all? Or?
They're picking at them still. The sheephead are still biting. As always, I think the jetties will start picking up from there. The offshore reefs, if they can get out there to them, the black sea bass will be there. Some of the other bottom fish, we're seeing some reports coming in further out. People are catching some of the groupers. They're catching some of the vermilions. Of course, they're catching the elusive red snappers. There's been a fair amount of those getting released.
Let's talk about red snapper for a minute. I know that the rules have changed. I've heard a lot of everybody wants to get into a discussion about red snapper. Tell us about red snapper and what's been going on with them as far as limits and where we are today.
Right. Well, the red snapper, you get, I think it's one or two per person, 20 inches within state waters. So that is 3 miles and in. If you catch a snapper out in the federal waters, which is 3 miles beyond, you cannot keep the fish, no matter what the size is. I think there is a season coming up in mid-July that will allow people to get out and keep one snapper of any size in federal waters.
Right, that's where I've heard that a lot of people talking about, what does it matter about federal water versus state waters? I can keep two here, but I can't keep any out there. And I'm like, well, the federal waters are controlled by NOAA, right?
Correct. Yeah, they're federal waters. They're controlled by the federal government, NOAA, and they're the ones that set the dates. We don't have anything. South Carolina Department of Natural Resources does not set these dates. We, you know, work with NOAA to enforce the laws. And it's the Red Snapper program, in my opinion, has brought the population back positively. And
right,
people are catching red snappers on a regular basis. And they did it down in Louisiana to rebuild the population, and it worked out very well. So I think it's just a little bit more time, a little more reporting. If we can get solid, good reporting, we could probably open it up a little bit more than specified weekends throughout the year.
Right. But that's an excellent point to make, is the reason you close the season, the reason you place really strict limits, is because you're trying to help the overall population. And people don't understand, it's not just South Carolina. You're looking at North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida. All those states have to work together. Because there's one big ocean. It's not just South Carolina's ocean.
Correct. Yeah, and South Carolina is grouped in, like you said, with all those other states. So we all are participating in you know, Florida's a little bit different than South Carolina and Georgia coast. And North Carolina gets a little bit different fishery. So we're all in that South Atlantic management zone.
Right, right. So going offshore a little further, is there any activity? The dolphin kind of cooled off now?
Dolphin seems to have cooled off. I think a lot of it has to do with the wind, the way it's been blowing, the northeast and everything. But the billfish bite has been one of the strongest that I've seen in the past couple of years. As you know, I worked at Governor's Cup Series, which is a tag and release billfish program.
Right.
Tournaments. And Bo Hickett, I think they caught 57 blue marlin in one day out of the fleet.
You're kidding.
I can't remember how many boats. But, I mean, there are some boats that had 3 and 4 blue marlin coming in, which is just, this is Costa Rica, Central America, Mexico-style fishing here. When you got boats that are catching that many fish, the dolphin bite was really hot. Somebody brought in a 110-pound yellowfin, which we haven't really seen in years.
Cool.
And the blackfin bite has been good. I think if we can just get the Northeaster to go away, offshore will pick back up.
Now, when you're saying yellowfin and blackfin, for the folks that aren't coasties, that's a tuna.
Those are tunas. Those are two different species
tuna
of tuna.
Blackfin tuna.
Right. The blackfin, they average largest one, you know, 35, 36 pounds. The yellowfin can get up into 210 pounds, a couple hundred pounds. So,
I
can remember the day we used to catch them 60, 80.
Oh, wow. So how about, what does that compare for the folks that like to watch the tuna show? What does that compare to a bluefin tuna?
Oh, you're talking about wicked tuna and the bluefins?
Yeah, we get into wicked tuna. Yeah, right.
Oh, that's you're talking Volkswagens versus 18-wheelers.
Absolutely. That's it.
Two different sized fish.
We don't have bluefin in our waters, do we?
No, we don't. It seems like they kind of stay on the other side of the Gulf Stream, but they do come into the North Carolina area, and that North Carolina fishery is a little bit different. They will catch the bluefins out to about 90, 150 feet of water off of there, because the Gulf Stream comes in on the coastline so much, a little bit closer.
Absolutely.
I think you can get them out of South Carolina if you just want to take the time and go deep.
Right, but I remember people going nuts when they brought that show to North Carolina. Like, oh, they're in the Carolinas. No, they're not in South Carolina. They're up in North Carolina.
Exactly.
Totally different fishery. Yeah.
Totally different fishery. Totally different. North Carolina is way different than we are.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to mention this because, you know, I love my flounder fishing as much as you or anybody else for inshore, but people complain about our flounder fishery and the limits we put on, but I don't think a lot of people understand how bad North Carolina is in their flounder fishery now. We are very blessed to still be able to go out and catch flounder, and the reason we're putting the stricter limits is to protect the ones we have and let them grow some. And I know that that's something you see out there on the coast every day checking folks.
Right. And I've talked to the biologist throughout this about the whole that whole flounder law that came. And the biggest problem that they have is they can control the breeding of the redfish. They've cloned the trout. They've cloned the cobia. They can't clone the flounder because the flounder starts upright with two eyes on either side, and then it rolls over and goes flat. And they
right.
can't figure out how to biologically breed that fish in captivity to restock like the other species, the trout, the cobia, and the redfish.
And not to the level they're doing it. That's the main thing.
Correct. I mean, you put out a million fingerlings of redfish a year. You can't do that with the flounder, and that's the biggest problem. And North Carolina has got such a huge commercial flounder fishery that they haven't regulated yet has made a big difference because the flounder do migrate between us and them.
Right. I think a lot of people don't understand that. And they get nailed up there in a commercial fishery. And I know they're, for as far as non-commercial fishing, just regular folks fishing, their limits are so low now. And I hear so many horror stories in North Carolina with flounder. And that used to be
right.
where people wanted to go to fish, holding beans
yep.
and up there. And it's terrible now, the fishery is. So
I'm
very thankful for the fishery we have here that we still have. Like you said, Myrtle's Inlet, but even, you know, on our coast, Charleston, all the way down to Beaufort, we've got a pretty good flounder fishery, and I enjoy gigging like everybody else. And, wow, you know, being able to go out and gig a couple flounder in a night, you know, in the old days, you go out and gig 20, 30, whatever, you know, in a night. But still, be able to gig 10 a night right now is a big deal.
It is, because the numbers are down, so it's just kind of like, you know, you can get 10, you get your limit, that's doing great. 30 years ago, you know, that would have been closer to 50, whatever it was back in the day. You know, but I'll say our marine resources biologists, they do a good job in understanding and really work hard to protect the resources.
Hey, Major.
Right,
Major.
Right, absolutely.
Major.
Yep, go ahead.
We have had a caller waiting to talk to you. He could talk to both of you guys. It's not a fishing question. It's more about dove hunting, if you feel interested in taking the question.
Yep, shoot it on to it.
All right, let's go to Steve in Augusta.
I might let Willie sit back and answer this, and I'll judge him on it.
Okay, Steve. Go ahead, Steve. You're on
okay.
with the Major.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
my call. Yes, sir. First of all, I really look forward to this segment every other week, and if this question needs to be moved back to the next segment, I can do that. But I've been noticing a lot of dove flying in areas that used to be really good dove fields, but they've now been developed, you know, like property and subdivisions and stuff. But just looking around, I see the dove still flying all around and sitting on the power lines and all. And I just wondered, do they have a natural attraction to those areas that they had been in before, or why are they still congregating in those areas that are now developed that are not agricultural?
Mm, good question. Major?
So that is a good question. And I will tell you this. I have been a part of our banding program that we've been doing for years now. And one of the things that we've learned from our band reporting on doves, so doves are one of those species that are very easily adaptable to an urban environment. They'll feed in the bird feeder, and then they'll go to a dove field 20, 30 miles away and feed as well. And they our birds do migrate during the year and during the fall somewhat. When we say migrate, they will move. I can tell you that birds that we have banded, that have been banded under bird feeders, literally by volunteers, have ended up in dove fields other side of the county, 20, 30 miles away. Seeing doves on power lines like that, because they like to roost, they're going to like to get grit. So they'll get in the parking lot and get grit, you know, in these development areas. They like construction sites because there's grit there. And, you know, again, they're going to feed at a bird feeder, you know, not on the bird feeder because they have weak feet. They like to be ground feeding. So they're going to feed under the feeder. But those same birds under that feeder, you may have opportunity at the dove field come the season in the middle of the county somewhere or even a county over. They do move that much. So I hope that answers your question, but that's
– Yeah, it does. It was just amazing that specifically how I would see them in places that were really good dove hunting fields back in the days that are now developed, and I still see them flying around there. Just, you know, just curious question.
Absolutely. Well, they learn to adapt. They'll find a dove field still somewhere, I can promise you.
Okay, thank y'all.
Thank you.
Question.
Thank you very much, Major. You got about 3.5 more minutes to go to talk fishing or anything else.
Yep. Willie, I'm going to give you a final couple minutes here. Tell me, so as far as where we are in the year right now, June coming up, what's going to be the hottest fish to go after right now on the coast, inshore?
I think your sheep's head are going to be the hot. I think your bass on the surface and the grass on the high tides are going to be hot. Generally, offshore tends to slow down. Water gets warmer, the barracudas seem to move in. Kingfishing near shore will start to pick up around the reefs, around the jetties, and just some other live bottom areas. But I think that's about it. You know, generally the trout kind of cool off. I think the weak fish might pick up here and there.
You know, it's weird. I had 2 years ago in June, I caught more trout than I'd ever caught in McClellanville. We caught 60 in one day.
Mm.
We only kept 11, but we literally hooked 60 fish and just really had a great day fishing, enjoyed it, which I found odd. Is that odd isn't that odd around in the Charleston County or in this area that time of year, or is that something you can still do?
I think it's something you can still do. I think you just got to be, it's like anything else, got to be in the right place at the right time. And it depends on what the shrimp are doing, because, you know, trout love shrimp.
Absolutely.
And if we've got a great or good shrimp population going on, then those trout are going to hang and look for those shrimp.
I got a quick question for the two of you, real quick.
Yep.
I'm a big Yellowstone fan watching that. So
how are you gonna spin this one in, Phil?
Is there fly fishing in South Carolina anywhere?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah. And even inshore there's a lot of fly fishing now, isn't there, Willie?
It goes back to the bass and the grass is what we call it. And those guys, either they're gonna throw some sort of a spoon, or they will fly fish for the spot-tail bass in the grass down here. There's a lot of top water, but that's more of a spinning reel. But you still got your fly fishing throughout the whole state once you start getting into those mountain streams and everything.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. We got that. But on the coast, I know people do like to fly fish. So it's a special group that does it, but I know they like to sight fish when they do that. But
right. Yeah, that's when the marsh is really high. It's a 6'2" tide and above, and the bass are in their feed, and you're trying to get that fly presentation of that fly right in front of them, and they'll nail it, and it's a great strike.
Phil, great question out of nowhere. You lucked out.
That's me. You need to wrap it, sir.
All right, well. Willie, thanks for being on the show tonight. Thanks for giving us a little update on fishing on the coast. I know folks enjoyed hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate, Phil, another show for SC Wild. And we'll look forward to mid-June, and we'll see where fishing's at. Maybe check back in with Willie and see what fishing looks like there. But boating's big now. This is where you need to remember. When you go out, make sure you have a life jacket for everybody in the boat. Make sure you tell somebody where you're going and when you plan to return so they know to look for you if you don't come back.
Thank you, Major. Thank you, Willie. Great edition of SC Wild from DNR here on Sports Talk. Thank you, Steak Man. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, everybody. See you tomorrow night from Gainesville.